Welcome to the Fantasy NASCAR Podcast. We do not have a cup race this weekend. Thought about not doing the podcast, but last time that we didn't have a cup race, I just went ahead and did an Xfinity-only podcast. I believe that was for Iowa. So we'll do that again, and this time it's going to be for Road America, which is probably a racetrack that even some heavy, hardcore NASCAR fans don't really pay attention to. Probably a lot like Mid-Ohio. People don't really notice that Mid-Ohio is going on, or you might watch Mid-Ohio during the weekend because there still is the Michigan Cup race. Road America typically happens when there is absolutely nothing going on, and it's off on its own. It's a weird road course. It's kind of like Bowmanville, the Canadian truck race. That's a road race that, again, I have to question myself because I don't even know if I've ever watched that race happen, but Road America's weird. I mean, it's more of a, you wouldn't really think of it as a NASCAR road course, but they do run there in the Xfinity Series. It's a 4 mile long track. That is really, really long. To give you some perspective, they only run 45 laps in this race. 45 laps, a 4 mile racetrack. It's huge. I mean, I guess that's not really big compared to other road courses, but compared to the road courses in stock car racing, it's a pretty long racetrack, and it's a really fast racetrack. It's not like Sonoma, it's not like Mid-Ohio, which are really technical and have really slow turns. It's pretty wide open, has some pretty big straightaways and some not forgiving turns, but turns that you can run at high speeds. I guess if you're looking for a comparison, you compare it to Watkins Glen, and the speeds are pretty much the same. Watkins Glen, you're running around 110 miles per hour on average. Same thing at Road America, but what's different here is Watkins Glen's about 2.5 miles at 110 miles per hour. This is a 4 mile racetrack at 110 miles per hour. It's pretty crazy, pretty wide open, pretty long racetrack, and you know, when I say, hey, it's not that technical, you immediately think, well, it must be an easier racetrack. And it's true in that you don't have these really slow turns that you absolutely have to nail. But the problem is when you are running a 4 mile racetrack that's very long and very wide open and very fast, it's really easy to make a mistake. And if you make that mistake by going too fast and overdriving a turn, you're really going to pay for it. You're really going to mess the car up. You're going to fly off of the track. Even if you're, you know, the race spreads out, which it will, when you're running high speeds, they're pushing it, the tires are fading away. It's not like Sonoma where if you miss it, you're going pretty slow, and so it's not really going to kill you. You're only going 40 miles per hour in some of these turns or whatever, so it's not a big deal. When you're going 110 miles per hour on average and you push it a little too far, you're going to have some problems. You have some damaged cars. You have some beat-up cars. And then on top of that, you got guys that just don't have very much experience at this road course. They don't have very much experience at a road course like this. You don't have any of the cup drivers really coming down and running this race. And the experienced road course ringers, which there will be at Road America, are in pretty inferior equipment. They're not getting the big time rides. It could change. I haven't seen the entries list. We may see some road ringers get to step in a JGR car or an RCR car or something along those lines, but we don't always see that. And even when we do, they're really not the greatest. Or, and I mean, technically, you know, it's not like JGR cares about, oh, I got to get this win at Road America, or RCR is absolutely pumped about getting a win at Road America. What they want to do is sell that seat. So whoever has the most money, sure, you can drive the 18 car at Road America. Sure, you can get behind the wheel of the 3 car at Road America. They don't care about winning. They don't care about top fives. It's how much money can you bring? How much sponsorship can you bring? Because it's freaking Road America. No one really cares about this track. I mean, obviously, some of the pure Xfinity fans, whoever the hell those are, or the people up in, what, Wisconsin, wherever the damn track is, of course, they love Road America, and it's a good racetrack. Probably not so much for the Xfinity. I mean, it's cool to have another road course. It is. And it could be better. It's just you only go there once in a while. And I'm telling you, when you'll see the entry list, you'll think, geez, these guys are not very good. But I'll talk a little bit more about Road America here in a bit. We'll go into the individual races and how they finished and what are some of the trends at this road course. But probably the most important thing so far would be to look at, well, how have the road course races been thus far? And one of the cool things about the, well, maybe this is not a cool thing. You could look at it different ways. It's a good thing for the Xfinity Series and for the drivers and for the teams to sandwich all of the road courses together. We go Watkins Glen, Mid-Ohio the next week, we go to Bristol, and then the next week we go to Road America. So as far as the teams go and setting up cars, it really is helpful to them. It makes a lot of sense. Would it be cooler to spread them out throughout the rest of the season? Yeah, it would, but from a logistical perspective, you really can't do that because the Xfinity race typically runs at the same tracks as the Cups. So it works to go to Mid-Ohio when everyone else is in Michigan. And it works to go to Road America when it's really not that far from Mid-Ohio. You're already up north. You're already up north from Watkins Glen, and it's an off week for the Cup Series. So that all makes sense. Here it is, and I guess from a fantasy perspective, it's kind of cool because we've been doing a lot of road courses lately, and it helps us adjust, especially with strategy, because DraftKings doesn't really adjust the salaries when it goes to road courses. We've talked about this at Watkins Glen. We've talked about this now. Has it been as big of a factor as it should? Probably not, because the upper-tier cars in the Cup Series, the upper-tier cars in the Xfinity Series are just so good that you still can get away with overpaying for high-priced cars. And then on top of that, you just no one else scores enough points. Nonetheless, when we having these road course races together, it helps us remember how well these prices are going to be wrong. And you're going to see some interesting things. I haven't really talked about optimal lineups in the road courses too much. I did a little bit, the Cup Series. But the problem with talking about those was, I mean, I could go over, I haven't talked about Watkins Glen. I talked about Sonoma ad nauseum, about how by some weird random circumstances, you're able to pay up for two drivers in the Cup Series. That didn't happen at Watkins Glen. You didn't need to pay up for multiple high-priced drivers. But I don't really want to spend time on that. What I'd rather talk about is the Xfinity Series, where you have an even bigger gap. The disparity in pricing between the Cup drivers and the Xfinity drivers is really rather large. And normally on an intermediate track, that makes sense. Even though we run a limited amount of laps, or at least less laps, in the Xfinity Series. But then you take it and you say, okay, well, we're running less laps, but still we're getting these ridiculous prices. And then we're running even less laps. I mean, this week at Road America, 45 laps! 45 laps! I can do quickly in my head. That means there's only 90 fast lap points. It means there's what? 12.25 laps led points? Did I do the math right? No, I didn't. I think it's like 11.25. 11.25 laps led points. That's not a lot. So we're talking about 60 hog points on the table. But the thing is, you're going to say, well, not going for Logano this week. Well, Logano's not racing. Brad Keselowski is not racing. Ryan Blaney's not racing. This is their off week. They're not going to run at this track. And you may say, well, what if? You never know. Well, we do know. Look at the Iowa race a couple weeks ago. Not that one. But I mean, obviously, they didn't. They were going to drive. Well, actually, I mean, you go back Pocono 2 years ago. Brad Keselowski flew from Pocono back to Iowa to race. I don't know why he was doing that or what he was thinking. And he didn't even win that Iowa race. But if you go to the Iowa race right before the Sonoma race, the last time the Cup drivers had a week off, no one ran the Iowa race that Sunday. Everyone wanted to enjoy their week off. Or they had other things to do. It's a long season. February to November, you get a week off. You know, you want to take that week off. So you're not going to get those really expensive drivers. So what we'll probably see are guys like Christopher Bell, which at Mid-Ohio was priced around $12,000, which is absolutely ridiculous. So I got the real number in front of me. Let me pull up. Christopher Bell was, I want to say $1,200. He almost won the race. And we'll talk about that. $11,800 for Christopher Bell, a guy not known for running road courses. Elliott Sadler, $10,800. That's a steep price for a guy that is good at road courses, but is not known for being a road. I mean, he's got plenty of experience. More experience than probably anyone in the field, especially in a stock car at a road course. But $10,800, I don't know. I mean, Justin Allgaier, 11,200. And you're probably shouting at me, but he won the Mid-Ohio race. He won it. 11,200. It made sense. Technically, it didn't. Or, well, I mean, he did. But we'll go into the optimal lineup at Mid-Ohio, and you might be a little bit surprised. I'm not surprised because I'm sitting here telling you don't spend up for a drive. I mean, I've been shouting this for a long time. I've been riding this, dying on this hill sometimes. But, you know, at Mid-Ohio, I didn't die on the hill. I was right. Finally right, but there was a lot of circumstances. Well, no, there really wasn't a lot of circumstances. You just don't pay up at a road course when there's not a lot of laps, and clearly when these guys are not the best road course racers, you just don't do it. So let's look at it. Let's look at the optimals. Those are some of the strategy points that you got to think about when you're building your lineup this week for Road America. And since there's only 45 laps at this one, I mean, just to give you a comparison, if we go to Mid-Ohio, there was 44.25 hog points at Mid-Ohio. Yeah, that is right. It's even less if we look last year at Road America. There was, geez, my math was way off. What did I say there was going to be? Yeah, gosh. All right, so a little bit ago I said there's 45 laps. That means there's going to be, there's 45 laps. That means there's only 22 fast lap points. Wow, I was way up. There were only 22 fast laps and another 10 laps led. You got caution laps because of the stages. So if you look at last year's Road America, there were 27 hog points. 27. And we go back a year before when you didn't have stages in the 2016 Road America, and still you only had 26 hog points that would have been scored. 26. Even if your driver gets all 26 of those, I mean, he has to. Your driver has to get all 26 of those, really, to help you pay up. Now, raw points-wise, maybe it works just because there aren't a lot of points available. But place differential is going to quickly flip someone if you overpay for a driver that he's only, you think he's going to be the hog. You take a $12,000 driver, you think he's going to hog all the points. Cool. But then by taking that guy, he's going to hurt other picks that you can make. And there's going to be guys at this road course that can get place differential. And again, I say you don't spend up. Again, I haven't seen, we don't know the pricing yet. But DraftKings typically prices these guys up regardless of the amount of laps in a race. That's just what they do. The only time they ever adjust is at road courses or at plate races. And really, I don't think they change it because of the laps. They just change it because they want to make sure everyone can put anyone they possibly can in a lineup to create as many multiple random lineups as possible because of all the crazy wrecks. That's my theory behind it. But I'm not in on those meetings, so I can't really tell you. I'm not in any meetings. I'm as far away from just about everything as you can possibly be. Let's look at the Watkins Glen race. Let's try to pick up on, well, who ran well and what was the optimal lineup. Let's just look at the optimal lineup. And what I want to ask you is, did you need, like, look, we look at Watkins Glen and we got Joey Logano, we got AJ Allmendinger, Kyle Larson. Was Brad Keselowski in that race as well? Brad Keselowski. I believe Brad Keselowski was right there at the end battling it out, if I remember right, and he got spun out. And that killed some lineups. But so you got all those really big, expensive drivers. Logano, 12-4. Keselowski, 11-7. Almirola, 10-5, but you were probably ignoring him. I get that. Who else do we have? We had AJ Allmendinger at 11-2. Very expensive. Kyle Larson, I believe, had an issue. He was at 12-9. He was the most expensive of any of them. That doesn't really make any sense. I mean, if you've watched, you know that the 22 car has been pretty good at these road courses in the past. Better than the 42 car hasn't really been known to set it up. The 42 car's had, what, a good race this year at Las Vegas. Kyle Larson was really fast. Again, he was fast in the Chicago race, but that's Chicago. I don't know. Just didn't really seem to make any sense there to have him priced as the highest driver. But he was. Anyway, so the question goes back to when you built your line, do you think, I got to get one of these expensive hogs? Do I got to get two of these expensive hogs? Or fade them completely? What do you think? One hog? Two of these expensive cup drivers? or fade them completely. If you go with one, you can build a decent line. If you go with two, then you are absolutely double punting 5,000 range, which we've seen work in the Xfinity series because it's the Xfinity series and some of these cars just fail a lot. And some of these cars just make tons of mistakes and they wreck a lot. That we can see a 5,000 car, as long as they're starting far enough in the back, just through attrition, and maybe they catch some brakes, move their way up. Especially at a road course where you kind of just logging laps back there, and you're going to be fine if some other people wreck or spin out, and maybe you'll benefit from people getting penalties or mistakes, and you can make it work. Intermediate tracks, it's a little trickier because it's very easy that you can lose a lap or two laps, and then it's pretty much you're out there, and you're not going to move forward. You can't really gain any spots. Someone makes a mistake, it doesn't matter because you're a lap or two laps down. A little bit tougher, but at a road course where everyone's pretty much locked into the lead lap, it can work. And technically, a lineup with Joey Logano and AJ Allmendinger scores 287.25 and 25 points. A lineup that completely fades the elite drivers and rosters driver in terms of points scored 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. Scores 286.75. So half a point separates the optimal lineup. So technically, and it doesn't really matter, I guess, because no one built any of these lineups. And that's one of the neat things about the Xfinity Series. A lot of times you don't get the optimal lineup built. It doesn't happen. There's not as many entries in the Xfinity Series, but because the pricing is so crazy, and a lot of times the results are so crazy, that you don't get the optimal line. You don't need the optimal lineup. So either one of these would have worked. Joey Logano, AJ Allmendinger. Now that benefited from Brad Keselowski spinning out at the end, but you could have, so say AJ Allmendinger, say Brad Keselowski doesn't have the issue at the end, you have the money with this salary because Allmendinger's 11-2. Well, technically you don't. But you can make it work pretty easily. You can swap in Brad Keselowski instead of AJ Allmendinger, and you can downgrade, I believe, Brian Henderson to Stephen Boyd, maybe. You can make it work. It wouldn't be that, but I still think that it would still score a lot of points. I don't know if it would score 2.872. I don't know. What do we even care? What are we talking about? Keselowski wrecked at the end. If he didn't wreck at the end, that lineup probably would have worked, but it would have been close. The point is, a lineup without any of the hogs. If I took Brandon Jones, third most points, Tyler Reddick, fourth most points, Allgaier, fifth most points, Priest, sixth most points, Reed, seventh most points, and Custer, eighth most points, that lineup was very, very good. 286.75. Now, one of the issues that I have in having this conversation, because you're thinking, well, that's cool. Maybe I can fade the top tier expensive guys. It's possible, but when these Cup drivers came into this race, they shifted the salary. So Justin Allgaier was $9,400 in the Watkins Glen race. Typically, Justin Allgaier is above $10,000, around $11,000. Tyler Reddick, 8.6. Brandon Jones, 7.5. Ryan Preece, 8.1. Ryan Reed, 7.3, which Ryan Reed actually, yeah, that's about to make sense. And Cole Custer, $9,000. Their prices got dipped down to make room for the Loganos, the Allmendingers at the top. Still, pretty good lineup. I don't know if I would take that and say, hey, I'm going to build a lineup this week where I fade your Allgaier, where I fade your Sadlers, where I fade the top tier. But we'll talk about that in a second because maybe it will work. Let's look at the Mid-Ohio in a second. We flip down and we look at the other lineup at Watkins Glen. Joey Logano, AJ Allmendinger, as I mentioned. Joey Logano with 16 hog points. AJ Allmendinger with 7 hog points. Allmendinger was really good in the rain. If you remember when it was raining, he just was way faster than everybody. When the rain went away, then it went back to Logano. Because Logano in the 22, incredibly fast. The 22 car has been lights out at these road courses. The 22 car has been the best car in the Xfinity Series this year. The problem with the 22 car is it's constantly being driven by Austin Cindric, who's a decent race car driver, but not that good. He's just not that good. And he doesn't give the team the information they need. It's a great team with Brian. I can't remember his name. I think it's Brian something. Do I get it right here? Brian, whatever. What's it matter? But the 22 car, everyone knew it was the fastest at Road America, and then not Road America, the fastest at Watkins Glen, and everyone knew it was going to be the fastest car at Mid Ohio as well. So Logano being fast, not a surprise. Kozlowski being fast again probably wasn't much of a surprise. I believe Kozlowski got the lead because Logano's. So what happened was, okay, I remember now. Logano is in the 22 car and is just killing stage one. But what he has to do is stay out in stage one because the 22 car is still running for owner's points. And probably going to win the owner's points. It's a big deal. At the end of the year, you've got the, you know, the driver who wins the championship. You got the manufacturer who scores the most points. Cool, no one really cares about that anymore anyway. But then there's the owner points where it's based on a specific car, I believe. It's not based on how many points. I don't know if they have a formula. I think they just take the number one car from each owner, and whichever one that is, then that owner wins the championship. Whatever it is, doesn't really matter. I don't care. I don't get into Richard Childress versus Penske versus Joe Gibbs. It's just kind of stupid, but they count it because we score everything. You know, we create wrestling belts for everything. There's the U.S. belt. There's the Intercontinental belt. There's the World belt. There's the Universal belt. There's the Extreme belt. It's what we do. We give out trophies for everything. We're very well known for that around the world. America, the country full of participation badges. Don't think it used to be that way. We used to kick butt and take names, I think is what they said. Now we give everyone, including Richard Childress, some sort of pat on the back and say, good job, pal. We need you. Because if it wasn't for you, we would only have 33 cars in the field. And God knows that would be a nightmare. Because it's so much better now that we have 36 cars and not 40 cars and not 43 cars. And either way. So he had to stay out stage one to get those 10 bonus points, even though he didn't really need stage win points. But the 10 bonus points, they need those. So he had to stay out. Kozlowski in the 12 car, which really isn't running for ownership points, was able to pit before the end of the stage. That meant Kozlowski inherited the lead going into stage two. That's where he led. Eventually, we had some rain at some point. AJ had it. Got dried, track dried out, and eventually Logano, being the fastest car, moved his way back to the front, battling with Kozlowski at the end, and I believe Kozlowski spins out at some point. They go back and forth. So there's your fast cars. Big surprise there. What? You're telling me Logano, Allmendinger, and Kozlowski were the fastest cars? Yeah, that's what I'm telling you. How does that help me this weekend? It doesn't, but it does in terms of Logano's. Well, two things that I take away real quickly from Watkins Glen. The 22 car is the best car. AJ Allmendinger was in the GMS car, which is running pretty well this year. It's run a lot better when Spencer Gallagher's not in the car, but it tells me that the equipment is pretty strong, and whatever connection that GMS has this year with Hendrick Motorsports, which we don't talk about a lot, doesn't get reported a lot, but they must have some sort of really strong alliance or some strong deal with Hendrick Motorsports. So much so that, you know, there is the rumor that, hey, Spencer Gallagher is going to move over, or the theory that Spencer Gallagher's dad, the owner of Allegiant Airlines, that's right, you need big-time money to be involved in the sport, even though I don't know if anyone flies Allegiant, but the owner of Allegiant Airlines and had the truck, still owns a Truck Series team, moved up, bought an Xfinity Series team just so his son could have something to race, and now with BK Racing being pretty much liquidated and run by the bank, someone's going to buy that charter next week, and the rumor next year, and the rumor is that this would be a good spot for, you know, GMS is pretty much considered, just keeps pushing Spencer Gallagher up regardless of whether he's ready or not, and this would be the next step, and there's the opportunity to buy that charter, and he's got the sponsorship obviously because of Allegiant. But the problem, well, the real problem will be, well, Spencer's not ready. There's no reason to send him up to the Cup race. But that's, you know, that's the rational, logical analysis. No one's gonna believe or fall for that. What people are gonna say is, well, no one's gonna say anything. But the problem that they're running into is that BK Racing, at least at the moment, when they buy these cars, it's all Toyota. You can change it over, but it's not going to be a cheap process. If you're going to, you could just buy the charter and not buy the equipment. And I guess that would make sense. But what they're going to want to do is keep their Hendrick Alliance. And I guess you could go up and you have to build your all these new cars. It would be so much easier to buy the charter along with the cars. But they're Toyotas, and you're going to need that Hendrick Chevy Alliance. And I guess you could adjust the chassis. That's going to be a lot more expensive than just buying the damn Toyotas. And you have to buy engines, which you can't use those. You know, they're probably terrible, but who cares? It's your first year of racing. If you're buying a chart and you're just getting into it, you're kind of just going out there. You don't want to have the best equipment. You're just trying to get going, and you build it throughout. Well, you're not going to be able to do that if you buy the BK Racing equipment. So that's a bit of a hiccup. I don't know if GMS is going to make that move. Probably better to stay in the Xfinity Series. But back to the point, AJ Allmendinger ran really well in this car. And at Mid-Ohio, Spencer Gallagher, no, he wasn't really impressive, but he had an average running position of 15th. That's pretty good for Spencer Gallagher, a guy that's been absolutely terrible at road courses. And that happens when you rush a kid up, or you rush a kid that's probably not that good to begin with, and say, hey, go get on this road course and make it work. Well, I don't know. Oh, well, hell, it doesn't really matter this week, so I don't even know why man is analyzing Spencer Gallagher. But the point is, he ran better than I thought. I thought he'd be more of a 20th place car. He finished really well because of the chaos that people were just spinning out left and right. But he had a 15th place running position. Next point, well, one of the people that we do know that is going to be running at Road America is Bill Elliott. Bill Elliott's going to be in that car. I don't know what to expect from Bill Elliott. We'll have a good idea in practice. When we see him running in practice to see if he can do it. I don't know if he can or he can't. He ran at Mid-Ohio. He was in the Trans Am race, but he wasn't because the engine failed on his first lap. So he didn't turn a single lap in the Trans Am race at Mid-Ohio, which he was pretty much just using as a warm-up to get ready for Road America. So much for that. He did get in practice laps. He did participate in all the practices of the Trans Am race. So that's good, I guess. Apparently, Chase Elliott is sharing his braking notes with his dad, saying, well, here, Dad, here's how you run this racetrack that you've never run before. I don't know. I will be really interesting to see how much are they going to charge us to roster Bill Elliott. If he looks fine in practice, then I don't know. The car's okay. The car's good. The car is one of the better cars, and the team seems to know what they're doing. We'll see what happens. It's going to be strange. It's interesting. By no means at this point in the week can I say, fade Bill Elliott. He's an old man. Well, he is an old man. But hell, Morgan Shepherd's still, I don't know. I don't know if we can use Morgan Shepherd as an example. The guy's starting parked something like 497 races in a row. An honor that he doesn't get a participation badge really for. You know, we give everyone else a participation badge, and comes to Morgan Shepherd and we do nothing but disparage him and make fun of the old man with his racing for Jesus. I don't know if Jesus is really sponsoring that car. I know you're probably saying, look, you idiot, Jesus can't sponsor the car. Jesus can't really write a paycheck to Morgan Shepherd, paid in full. But what he could do is, I don't know if there might be some religious church groups that are funding it, which then means that people are putting into the collection plate to pay for Morgan Shepherd to start in park. Wouldn't that be great if your donations to the collection plate are... And it doesn't seem that crazy, because think about this. Churches get tons of money, right? And they spend money in all kinds of different ways. How do we not know that Racing for Jesus could be a small nonprofit organization that a bunch of churches give, what, 0.01% of their funding? And if you get enough Baptists together, and sorry to pick on the Baptists, but they're probably the only idiots that would pay into this. I'm sure we just lost several. I don't know how many people are still listening anymore, if I haven't offended anybody. But man, if I'm just thinking to myself, who in their right mind would say, you know what, let's give a portion of our proceeds here to Racing for Jesus? And I would imagine it would be one of these 7 million Baptist churches down here in the South. And if you get enough money, you can start paying for Morgan Shepherd to go out there and park his car every week. I don't know. Maybe Racing for Jesus is just something that he slaps on his car. I know it's available as an iRacing scheme, and I always put it on my car. And I'm still waiting for the checks to roll in, Jesus. But I don't know. I don't want to accept that money. I feel like it would be blood money, or there would be some sort of karma that comes along with accepting that payment. Anyway, so I'm supposed to be talking about Watkins Glen. I'm talking about Morgan Shepherd. That's not where I need to be right now. So Brandon Jones ends up scoring the third most fantasy points in that Watkins Glen race. I told you the optimal lineup, and that's really interesting. You hang on to that thought about when, how to build your optimal lineup, and we'll go into Mid Ohio here in a second. Brandon Jones, I said no way to Brandon Jones because he had to, I believe he had to change his transmission right before the race, and I thought, not going to go down that route. And then he started from the rear, but he was able to make his way all the way to the front. See, his average running position was 19th, and I believe that was where his starting position was going to be. Started 20th, technically started from the very back because of the change. He only spent 29.3% of the race inside the top 15, so he finishes 7th. Pretty lucky. Probably playing the pit road game, and a lot of people are going to get away with that and make huge gains. I mean, we'll talk about Road America here in a second, where Jamie Clements was pretty good at Road America last year, probably a 10th place car, but he played the pit road strategy perfect and didn't make any mistakes, and he won the damn race. Jamie Clements won the damn Road America race. If that's not scaring you about playing fantasy NASCAR this weekend, then I don't know. I like Jamie Clements, and we've played him every once in a while this year. Everyone loves his story. You know, basically pulling up his car in the back of a wagon that he's hauling in with his Ford F-150. I don't know if it's a Ford or whatever he's holding it in, but it's a good story. But the fact that he won is pretty ridiculous. Brandon Jones, Tyler Reddick was the chalky play. He spun out and qualified. Decent car. Worrisome. I mean, Tyler Reddick is your... Tyler Reddick is your Stenhouse of the Xfinity Series. Even in the Xfinity Series, Stenhouse, when he was the best driver and two-time champion, still knew how to wreck a car. And Tyler Reddick knows how to wreck a car and does not have a lot of road course experience. But when Tyler Reddick is starting the race in 27th position, you kind of – I mean, he wasn't super chalk, but, boy, it was hard not to play him, especially at the price of, what, $8,600. Then you had Justin Allgaier with the fifth most fantasy points. Really not surprised. Justin Allgaier every single week. Doesn't matter what track. The guy's been racing for a long time. We talk about how old Ellie Sadler is. Well, Allgaier was in the Xfinity Series, went up to the Cup Series, and been back down to the Xfinity Series. He's in the best car. He hasn't won a championship because there's always someone better. If we look at the Xfinity Series the last couple years, there's always been really... I mean, Eric Jones, Daniel Suarez, Chase Elliott, Ryan Blaney, even those guys didn't win championships. Chris Buescher, which is crazy, and Chris Buescher was not really that good. Ricky Stenhouse. But there was always someone better. And there's someone better this year. It's Christopher Bell. And Allgaier's not going to win a championship again, but it's fun to watch him come close. Kind of like Elliott Sadler. It's fun to kind of watch him come close. William Byron, another guy I mentioned that beat these guys. But Allgaier is... probably, what would be your Allgaier comparison to the Cup Series? If I had to say who Allgaier was, is he like Brad Keselowski? No, because he's getting some wins, but I would put him in that Brad Keselowski, Joey Logano range right now. He's not elite. I know we don't really have a big three in the Xfinity Series. We have a big one. It's Christopher Bell. And so you take a step down, and maybe like Clint Bowyer. That's kind of what Allgaier is. He's good. And, I mean, he won an Iowa race, and he's got his wins. He's got his Dover win. He won at Mid-Ohio. But every time he wins, you're like, yeah, well, who else was going to win? That's always my response is, well, who else is going to win? And that's probably what you should think at Road America. Who the hell else is going to win this race? Christopher Bell's good, but you put him on a road course he's never been to? That's a disadvantage. Whereas Allgaier has the best car and probably the best funded team, and he has experience. Who the hell else is going to win? Elliott Sadler's probably not going to win at a road course. So why not Allgaier? He wins because he wins against soft fields. Bell has beat Cup drivers. And that's usually the measure of success when we look at elite Xfinity drivers in the past. I like Allgaier. I know it sounds like I'm just talking a bunch of trash about him. But let's be honest. Allgaier can win when it's a soft field. He won the Dover race. I believe Christopher Bell had the start in the back. He won the Iowa race, the first one, because Bell couldn't get by him. It was almost impossible to pass the leader. You just couldn't get it done. You remember that first Iowa race? And Bell, he had to work his way to the front too. He didn't really have the back. He might have started from the back because of a change as well. But anyway, he got up to the front and just, there's only one groove. And they talk a lot about, oh, there's multiple grooves at Iowa. There is for cars running about 8th through 40th. But once you get to the top tier, there is one single groove at Iowa. Really like to see them do something to work in a second groove. That would make the racing a lot more exciting. Anyway, Allgaier wins against Softfields. I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. Ryan Preece in the 18 car. Why not? I don't know who's going to be in the 18 car this weekend. That's not going to be Ryan Preece as far as I know. Kyle Benjamin was fine in that car at Mid-Ohio, but it's just a strong car. It depends on who you get in the car, but I don't know. And Preece has experience too. A lot of times we think of Preece as this guy who just won out of nowhere at Bristol. Preece was running in the Xfinity Series for years. He was on underfunded teams, and eventually his money ran out, or the team's money ran out, or whichever way, and that was it. Now the last 2 years, he'll occasionally buy a ride with JGR, and he'll win. He's a very good race car driver. He's really good in the late model series, very talented, but he's made the decision of, well, I can spend my money to run the entire season Xfinity Series, but I'm going to be running in inferior equipment. Kind of like Ross Chastain, who probably is a really good race car driver. But we will never know, because he's taken his money and decided, well, or his sponsorships, whichever ones, however it works. I think JD Motorsports, you're buying your way into a lot of those cars. I'm not sure. I know he's got the watermelon sponsorship, but a lot of those guys, I think, paying their way into them. Anyway, you can spend the check and run 15th to 20th or 20th to 25th their entire season. Or you can take that money and it probably will buy you two or three races. So it's crazy that a JD Motorsports, you can get a full season, or I would take the full season. I think it would just be more fun. And maybe Preece did that before and he still has money. He's like, well, you know what, this time I'm just going to take that money and buy specific rides. And it worked out for him. He won the Bristol race, but a lot of that had to do with Christopher Bell getting hit by lap traffic. But Preece has still run well in those races. Nothing they take away from that win. And here, I don't know why. Maybe he got a deal on the Watkins Glen race, maybe he got a deal on Talladega, I believe was his other one. But I really question the races that Ryan Preece picked. Or maybe they just didn't give him other options. But I would love to see Ryan Preece running at some of these different ovals. The Bristol race, even if he won because Brandon Jones made a terrible move on pit road at the end and Christopher Bell wrecked, but he still was in it to win at the end. He's not going to win at Watkins Glen when you've got Joey Logano and AJ Allmendinger in the race. You're throwing your money away. What are you doing? He must have gotten a good deal on that race. Why at Talladega? Anyone can win at Talladega. Why spend money to be in the 18 car at Talladega? I would rather be in the JD Motorsports car at a fraction of the cost. It must have been some sort of package deal. They cut him a break at Bristol and said, all right, we'll give you Bristol if you take these other two that no one else wants. Had to be something like that. I don't know. I don't work for Joe Gibbs Racing. I don't know how they work these things out. Ryan Reed is your next guy. Reed has been really strong at the road courses, although he ran into some issues at Mid-Ohio. It looked like he was going to work his way up and then just spun. And those spins, and usually if it's just one spin, you're fine, but one spin turns to two spins, and Reed really didn't have the race that we needed from him. But he's been pretty good at the road courses. Except for last year at Road America, he had I was watching the race earlier, and man, that dude was just slamming into some walls, just going too fast. It almost looked like, you know, what you would do in a video game if you just really didn't care, and you're just sort of flying into turns and just using the walls just to turn the car. Kind of like when you were like a kid playing a video game, you can't really turn, so I'll just bounce off this wall to make the car turn. That was Ryan Reed at Road America last year. Cole Custer, Eric Allmendinger, Brad Keselowski round out your top 10. Brian Henderson, and Brian Henderson was in, what car was he? Was riding for Mario Gosselin? I'm pretty sure he was in a Mario Gosselin car. Henderson finished 21st, started 36th. I want to double check that. Yeah, Brian Henderson was in the 90 car for Mario Gosselin, and the 90 and even Alex LeBay, the last two road course races, have run really well, and that probably has a little bit to do with in the Pinty Series, which is in Canada, or Pinty Series. I learned which one it was, and then my brain has forgotten. I'm pretty sure it's Pinty. But in the Canadian NASCAR series, where Gosselin and LeBay originate, There are not a lot of road courses, but I want to say it's a lot more than, I want to say like 30-40%. So there's quite a few road courses, and they have experience and sets up pretty good cars in LeBay and Henderson. And then you had Andy Lally in the 90 car at Mid-Ohio, who went on an unconventional strategy and almost made it work, but then spun. It's just these damn road courses. You're like, all right, everything is looking good, and then they just spin out, and then seven cars pass them, and you're like, oh my god. The only See, that doesn't happen. When you spin out at an intermediate track, which you really don't do that often, the race stops. But at the road course, I mean, it's just like, boom, seven spots, you just lost. Then Christopher Bell, Joey Gase, who's run well at the last two road courses. Michael Annette, 15th most fantasy points, halfway decent. Ran well at Road America last year by playing the right strategy. Spencer Boyd, as I mentioned earlier, he was one of the preferable punts. Boyd has had a pretty decent season. He's running around, he's getting your 25th place finishes every single week. A guy that, you know, but it seems like the week that you end up playing Spencer Boyd's when something goes wrong. But that was a week at Watkins Glen where nothing went wrong. Elliott Sadler had a good race, 12th. And you say, well, 12th for Elliott Sadler is not very good. But you got to remember there were a bunch of cup drivers in that race. Cindric finished 13th, but Cindric was in the 60 car, which is a bag of, I'm not going to say anything. Clements finished 14th, average running position of 14th. Seems to be quite a decent road course racer. Casagrala, 15th finish. And then Garrett Smithley, 23rd. A little bit better in his typical 25th league. Garrett Smithley's not bad. He's going to get you a 25th place finish. LeBay finishes 19th. Ross Chastain finishes 20th. Let's see if there's any other notable guys here. Hemric, 16th. Truex, 18th. But those guys got negative place differential points. That definitely is going to hurt you. All right, so that's basically Watkins Glen. What can I take away? Brandon Jones, not that bad. Tyler Reddick, not that bad. Justin Allgaier is Justin Allgaier. The 18 car is always pretty good. Ryan Reed, halfway decent. Cole Custer, average running position of 10th. Again, that's not bad when you consider the cars that were running in front of him were cup drivers. Custer, pretty good, and we saw him replicate that for the most part in the Mid-Ohio race. The 90 car, someone to watch out for. Christopher Bell. You know, he's flashed his moments of brilliance at Watkins Glen. We saw him again do that at Mid-Ohio. The guy's good. The car's good. The team is good. It's just at a road course with a bazillion turns. If you make a mistake, then, well, your race isn't over, but your fantasy value, it plummets. You just can't make mistakes. And Christopher Bell, being as young as he is, he's going to make mistakes. Let's look at Mid-Ohio. And I'm already going way too late in this podcast. I haven't even talked about Road America. But anyway, here's the interesting thing about Mid-Ohio. So Justin Allgaier wins the race. He is the most expensive. Well, he's not the most expensive. Christopher Bell is. He is the second most expensive driver. But he is not in the optimal lineup. I repeat, Justin Allgaier wins the race. He scores the second most fantasy points, 56.5, but he is not in the optimal lineup. That is crazy, but it's not crazy. I've been talking about, do you really need to pay up? And we just went over Watkins Glen where you were able to build the optimal lineup by half a point less without playing any of the cup drivers by fading the top two scores. That doesn't happen anywhere. That is extreme, but it can happen at the road courses, especially when the prices are the way that they are. I don't expect that to happen at the cup level, even though the pricing's wrong. I still believe that you're going to need the guy that scores the most points. But at the Xfinity Series, where you get kind of weird pricing and not very many laps at all, right? You get Sonoma, Watkins Glen, but when you shrink it for the Xfinity Series, there's even less hog points available. And in this race, there was 44.25 hog points. You're going to run into the possibility of the most expensive guy not being up to. Especially, it was helped here by Austin Cindric being... I don't know what DraftKings was doing by pricing the 22 car at 7,700. I don't know what DraftKings was doing by pricing Austin Cindric, a kid who has a road course experience. In the K&N series, he was pretty good at the road courses. He won a truck race at the road courses. The guy's not a no-name. The guy is the son of the head of Penske. You know, we talk about Custer. He's another guy who's a son of somebody. And Christopher Bell and all these guys are being groomed for the bigger series. Austin Cindric is another one of them. And the reason why, you know, and this might have come off of, well, he didn't do very well in the 60 car. Yeah, well, no one does well in the 60 car. So he's priced poorly. Or he's priced just flat wrong. 7,700. He was easily the fastest driver and the fastest car in the 22. It was a no-brainer. And if you were even the slightest bit concerned, in the second round of qualifying, he was a whole second faster than the second place car. A whole second faster than Elliott Sadler. That told you everything you needed to know. And he destroyed the field all day. And he should have won the race, but there was nothing he could do because he was in the lead and he couldn't pit. Now, he could have. He could have said, all right, well, we're going to just forfeit the lead and hope that the great race. I mean, so if you watch the race, he stays out front. And under cautions, he doesn't pit because he's got the lead and he's got the best car and he's going to be fine. But when the cautions happen, Allgaier is able to pit a couple times, make room on the restart, and at the end, he's got, what, 20-lap fresher tires. And so we get a restart to end the race. I think there's like 7 laps left. If the race doesn't have a caution with 7 laps left, Austin Cindric wins the race. But you reset the field, and Justin Allgaier is on his bumper with 20 lap less tires. Allgaier is going to win the race. Again, it adds to the whole theory or the thought of, you know, Allgaier won, but he kind of got lucky again. Now, he did race clean. He didn't dump Cindric because it's probably not a smart move. If Allgaier dumped Cindric to win one, these guys who, like Allgaier, don't have fans to begin with and don't have, I mean, he's got a good connection with Brandt, but he can't do the publicity. He cannot go out there and wreck Austin Cindric. And you know Austin Cindric's absolutely going to return the favor in the playoffs. So he really didn't have that option anyway. People are like, well, I'm glad Allgaier didn't wreck him. Well, Allgaier couldn't wreck him. Allgaier has to outrace people. Allgaier can't wreck people. The only people Allgaier can wreck are his teammates. The only ones he'll get away with wrecking. But he didn't wreck him, whatever. We'll give him credit for that. And Allgaier wins because Cindric was on old tires. But Cindric destroyed the field. All of the hog points went to him. Could easily see that happen again here at Road America. Cindric had the best car at Road America last year. Don't believe that he had the most hog points. They were really spread out throughout the field. We had a bunch of different people taking the lead, but towards the end of the race, Cindric had the lead. Well, Hemric had the lead. Cindric took the lead. Hemric got hit with a penalty. Cindric, I believe, spun out at some point pushing the car, was unable really to make up a bunch of ground. Where did Cindric end up finishing? We'll get to that in a second. But either way, he looked good in the Road America race last year. He looked good last week or a couple weeks ago at Mid-Ohio. Allgaier finishes, wins the race, scores the second most points, but is not in the optimal lineup. Spencer Gallagher is your third most points, who benefits from a bunch of guys spinning out at the end and the restart at the end. He was a 15th place car, which is cool. That's better than where I thought he would be, and he ends up finishing 8th. Daniel Hemric was really good throughout the race. No surprise there. Average running position 6th, finishes 3rd. Hemric was good at Road America last year. Hemric is pretty good at a lot of racetracks. Matt Tift almost won at Road America last year. Might as well talk about this now. Well, we'll talk about that in a second. So Matt Tift almost won at Road America. He's been really good. You can look through his road course results. It's in the spreadsheet. All of this road course stuff is in the spreadsheet. tinyurl.com/NASCAR18. If I look at Matt Tift, he finished 3rd at Mid-Ohio last year. He finished 3rd at Road America last year. And so obviously him finishing 4th at Mid-Ohio this year, home track for him, not a surprise. That's weird to say that Mid-Ohio is your home track. You can't really have a road course as your home track, but they're always pushing the Ohio. I don't know why they talk him up so much about Ohio being a big deal for Matt Tift. It might be because there aren't any more Ohio drivers anymore. That Sam Hornish is not racing, so they can't really find that storyline. And so this is, I guess, the week to push the Mid-Ohio storyline. That's cool. That's great. Ryan Truex finishes 5th, average running position of 9th. He was up there the whole day running pretty well. I'm not really that surprised. He looked decent in practice. Alex LaBey plays a strategy move at the end. His average running position was 19th. He finished 9th. He's a 19th place driver, but he and Andy Lally stay out at the end, or they stay out in stage 2 and then stretched fuel. And both of them had to pit one more time. And they, you know, what LeBay was able to do was not wreck at the end, and then he got the pit, he got the caution at the end, allowed him to hold spots, and he had a decent restart at the very end. Lally lost spots because he spun, and he had all kinds of mistakes that he made during the entire race, and that really killed his finishing position. He had a fast car, fast race car driver, just made too many mistakes, got a lap down at one point, was able to get that lap back, but just... And going into this week at Road America, you really just, the guy that makes the least amount of mistakes, and it's not just pit road mistakes, it means, you know, don't spin the car into the grass. The guy that doesn't spin the car into the grass probably is going to win the race, and you're thinking, what are you talking about? That's really, go back and watch last year's race, and actually, never mind, scratch that, because I'm wrong. Because even Matt Tift and Jeremy Clements spun the car out. We'll talk about Road America. It's really ridiculous. You gotta, hell, I might as well say it now. So if you watched last year, you probably know it. Imagine if you are a diehard NASCAR, you probably have to be a pretty ridiculous diehard NASCAR fan to listen to this podcast 53 minutes in. So you probably already know this. But if you go and watch the YouTube Road America race, or just go to the YouTube Road America race and fast forward to 2 hours and 12 minutes, and you'll get to see all the excitement for what was happening. But how the race works was Jeremy Clements stretched fuel. Well, he didn't really stretch fuel. He just went an unconventional pit strategy. So when the leaders all... He's running around 10th for most of the race. So when Hemric and Cindric all pit, he stays out for another 15 to 20 laps. Kind of like what we saw Martin Truex do at Sonoma early this year. He stays out, stretches it, and pulls away. Now, when he does finally go into pit with, I think, 8 laps left, he gives up the lead. But then he gets to spend the last, 8 to 10 laps on fresh tires just gunning it while the other drivers have pretty much slowed down. And he's able to run down the leader. The cars are all spread up by that point after a really long green flag run, so it's really easy for him to make it through whatever traffic he needs to run through. And, you know, Hemric and Cindric and those guys made mistakes too, so they weren't able to cycle up. He ends up catching Matt Tift right as they're approaching the white flag. So you got one more lap left, and both of them push it really hard in the last turn. And they don't really, I don't want to say that they made contact. I want to say that they both just pushed it way too hard and both spun out. And so from there, I mean, it's almost like you're watching Ricky Bobby or what? Well, technically that's not the case, but I mean, you can envision in your head both cars spin out. And so then what it is the winner of this race, even there's one lap left, but the winner is going to be whoever can spin their car back and get going first. And so you see Clements and he spins out, and so does Tift. And Tift, though, the problem is when he gets loose, he gets into the sand a little bit. So it's taking him a little bit longer, and Clements is like, oh, I can get it out. And then Clements is hitting it too hard, and he spins himself again. But Tift is still in the sand, so he can't get right. And Clements is able to get his car straight and get going on the track and pull away from Tift, and that pretty much is it. And they run another lap, but Clements isn't able to pull away, and that's when you hear the announcer. You've probably heard this a million times if you watch NASCAR. He says, he's got it righted. You ever hear that in the commercial? That's from last year's Road America race when Jeremy Clements says, got the car in the right direction after spinning out on the last lap. So I was wrong. You're allowed to spin out once. You get one freebie. And from then, your race is over. He's got it righted. All right, so where were we? We were talking about Road America and LeBay playing strategy. And a lot of people are going to do that, try to pit as few times as possible. Brendan Gaughan, I liked Gaughan a lot, and he made it work. I thought he'd do a little bit better. I thought he was closer to an 8th place car. He finishes 12th, had issues. He spun out just like everybody else. Tommy Joe Martins with the 9th most fantasy points. Pretty surprising. He finishes 19th, starts 30th, probably just didn't make very many mistakes. The BJ McLeod cars haven't been too bad at the road courses, but I would prefer to roster a BJ McLeod car that with a guy that has more road course experience. Tommy Joe Martins doesn't really have a lot of that. Cole Custer, a disappointing finish. I mean, he finished 7th, and he was right there the whole time. He was running 2nd or 3rd, but he got spun. He got bumped. I believe he got into some damage a couple times. You know, a couple times that he got hit and spun and ran into situations. Ryan Reed finishes 10th. I liked him to be closer to a 5th-place car, but given all the spinning and driving through the grass that he went through, 10th place is not that bad. Elliott Sadler starts 2nd, finishes 6th. dumps Christopher Bell. Wouldn't be surprised to see Christopher Bell. And it wasn't really egregious, but didn't really give him any room there. Chase Briscoe rebounds. There were times where Chase Briscoe got down a lap with an issue that he had. He got his lap back thanks to some of the cautions at the end. Average running position 18th, finished 14th. Not bad for the 60 car. It's not a terrible car, but it's definitely, like, if you're Austin Cindric and you go from 22 to the 60, not very good. Chase Briscoe only gets to drive the 60, so I'm not so worried when Chase Briscoe is in that car. David Starr. There's weeks where David Starr really impresses. There's weeks where David Starr completely lets you down. Last week was a week where David Starr came through, but didn't matter. You didn't need him in your lineup because you didn't need to punt. I already told you the optimal lineup. Didn't I tell you? Maybe I didn't tell you. Well, it was Cindric, you skip Allgaier, and then you go Gallagher, Hemric, Tift, Truex, LeBay. You take one, and then 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That builds the optimal lineup. You don't need Justin Allgaier. You don't have to pay for his egregious salary. And you're saying, well, what if you put him in? Cool, put him in. You can take Allgaier. The drivers that score 1, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 are going to be better than any lineup where you take the driver 1, 2, and then you're trying to move around and you're just dropping down from there. Would it have worked if Allgaier led all the laps? Okay, maybe. But the case of Allgaier leading all the laps, not going to happen on a road course. That's ridiculous. These overpriced cup drivers, there's no guarantee that Christopher Bell, Elliott Sadler, Justin Allgaier, any of the guys that are going to be overpriced, Cole Custer, and even though Cole Custer's not even that high of a price, but there's no real reason that these guys are going to run away with the race. They don't have the awesome road course car. They don't have the road course pedigree. There's no reason that they're going to put up a huge number. There was a reason that Austin Cindric scored 30 hog points. He has the background. He's been pretty good at road courses, and he's in the 22 car that just killed the field the week before. That's killed the week. I mean, it's the best car in the Xfinity Series. There's been weeks where the 18 cars showed up and said, hey, don't forget about me. But for the most part, it's been all about the 18 car this season. Christopher Bell with 15th most fantasy points. He ends up finishing 11th, but he was in it at the end. He had really rebounded a couple times, battled back, showed signs. Like I said, he's flashed some brilliance at these road courses, but he got dumped by Elliott Sadler. His average running position was 8th, not bad. Michael Annett. Got to put Michael Annett on your radar at these road courses. He just survives it and nurses the car home. Starts 24th, finishes 18th. Nothing special, but somebody I would consider. Josh Balicki, a road course ringer. He had a decent race. Ran into trouble at Watkins Glen. He's able to make it to the end at this one. It worries me. I don't want to spend $6,000 on Josh Balicki in a JP Motorsports car that you just don't trust. And you can see in practice that the car just isn't there. Balicki has the road experience, but the car just isn't there. Kyle Benjamin, a little disappointing. I thought he would get more out of his car. Average running position 14th, finishes 12th, or finishes 13th, starts 12th. Definitely disappointed by that. I just trusted the 18 car probably a little too much, probably because Ryan Preece was able to drive. Obviously, Ryan Preece is a better race car driver than Kyle Benjamin. He has more experience than Kyle Benjamin, but Benjamin had some K&N experience at road courses. Spencer Boyd is your punt, one of them. Again, Spencer Boyd working out if you needed a punt. He starts 35th. He finishes 25th. Spencer Boyd wasn't the preferred punt in Watkins Glen if you went that way, but he would have worked. Gase and Henderson were 1 and 2. Spencer Boyd would have been your next punt. There's Spencer Boyd showing up again. Jeremy Clements, there's your guy again. Average running position of 15th. Starts 17th, finishes 17th. Doesn't really do much for you in terms of fantasy points per dollar or even focus on scoring, but still, he's been halfway decent at these road courses, and you're going to want to consider him if things, you know, bounce in his favor. He's decent. Ross Chastain starts 14th, finishes 16th, about right there in Jeremy Clements' range. I don't think I ever say Jeremy Clements' name right. I want to say Clements. I will never get that one right, too. I get Alex LeBay right, though. Andy Lally started 8th. Finished 15th, had a lot better of a race car than that, but just made too many mistakes. Tim Coen or Cowan or whatever, he was halfway decent in last year's Road America race, but I believe he went off the track about 50 million times. Halfway, he's got some decent road course racing history. I want to say that he was in, the thing that worries me, he's in the 40 car for Carl Long, and that's right. No, he was, last year, I believe he was in the 40 car for Carl Long. This year, Tim Callum was, I'm pretty sure he's in a Carl Long car again. That's always, always, always a concern. But he has run the laps. Justin Marks, last week, So he ends up starting 23rd. He ends up finishing 22nd. Kills me by spinning at the end. Justin Marks ran so much better than that. Average running position 13th. He was slow in practice, and some people probably worried about him in practice, but the 42 car is better than that. And then you just knew Justin Marks. You look at the field, you look at the car, you look at his experience, you say he's going to figure it out. And he did. And he was running around the top 10 all day, but he just made too many mistakes. And he made a mistake at the very end, and that's what killed him. Ends up finishing, what, 10 spots worse than, 9 spots worse than where he was running. Joey Gase runs in 22nd the whole race, finishes 24th. Not bad. Going through, Smithley with a 28thly finish. Can't even get a 25thly. And then from there, it's a bunch of guys that didn't finish, guys that wrecked. Growler had issues, Leggy had issues, Light had issues, and then you get your starting Parkers. Yeah, that's how that goes. So there's your optimal lineup. There's your names of the drivers to watch out for. It's a typical elite guys. And if I go through this week, I'm thinking, all right, well, Austin Cindric's definitely going to jump to the top of my list in the 22 car. You got to take Allgaier just because he's Allgaier. I'm sorry, and I know he wasn't in this optimal lineup, but, I mean, Allgaier would have probably been in an optimal lineup if one guy just does not destroy the field. But if it feels like going through the Road America practice that Austin Cindric, again, is going to destroy the field, then sure, let's go Austin Cindric. I'm pretty sure he's going to be in the 22 car. I don't think any Cup drivers are going to go into it, and they're not going to put any random people in, so I wouldn't be surprised at all to see that happen. And I don't anticipate any of the Cup ringers coming down. There's going to be maybe a decent one, and we'll talk about it, but I don't see anybody crazy. I mean, Bill Elliott is not really going to scare me, or really, I don't know if I really need to roster Bill Elliott. I want to roster the good road course drivers, and the guys aren't really crushing the scoreboard. They're not killing the scoreboard. I don't need major points. I need good road course racers that are going to run around the top 15. I don't know if I really needed it. Look, Daniel Hemric, starting 9th, finishing 3rd, that wasn't a stretch. Matt Tift, yeah, maybe it worried you a little bit, but 8,600, 5th to 4th, sure, he can't really score a lot of points there, and he can lose a lot of points. But you don't need a lot of points. Ryan Truex, starting 6th, it's a bit of a worry. Like, oh man, but he can only go backwards. Yeah, but think about it this way. And I know when we take guys that we don't really like and they start near the front at other racetracks, at least in the Cup Series, you know, it terrifies you. I mean, it scares you to death if you were to take a Ryan Newman starting 7th. But that's because cars 10 through 20, or 7 through 20, are pretty good. And they definitely can get by Ryan Newman. But you look at Ryan Truex starting 6th. Well, he's starting 6th for a reason, because he's the 6th best in qualifying. That's two laps or two, you know, drives around the road course. But you look at the cars behind him, maybe you're not so worried. Chase Briscoe, Truex, meh, doesn't scare me that much. Ryan Reed, yeah, a little bit, but I'm not terrified. Michael Annette, no, that doesn't terrify me. Ross Chastain, no. Brendan Gaughan, yeah, but I mean, that 3 car hasn't been that great. You look at the cars behind him, and maybe it calms your fears a little bit. Alex LeBay, yeah, that one probably was off the radar, and he did play an unconventional strategy, but he's been decent. I mean, I look at his Pinty Series results at the road courses, and they haven't been that good. Although on the broadcast, they were talking about, like, at Le Chevalier in Montreal, he was pretty good. And I look at the results, and I've been looking at him the last couple weeks, like, he hasn't been good at road courses. What the hell are they talking about? He's got experience at the road courses. But they did mention he's been all right. He's been pretty good at these road courses, although all of his wins have been at the ovals. Yeah, that's right. All of his wins have been at the ovals. He doesn't have any wins at road courses in the Canadian Series. What are you talking about? But he's been decent. He's been decent at Watkins Glen. He's been good. He was okay at Mid-Ohio. They made the right guesses there. And more importantly, Mario Gosselin is bringing some pretty good cars to these road courses and has been for some time. I mean, Andy Lally, when he was out front, no one was catching him. Austin Cindric wasn't going to catch him. So again, I'm looking for the regular names. Brendan Gaughan wasn't in the optimal lineup, but again, he's a decent road course racer. Wasn't going to get a huge amount of place differential points, but it wasn't going to be bad. I don't know if I want to go for home runs, but I also don't want to, I don't know. Those guys weren't expensive. they were all decent in practice. Tift was fast in practice. Hemric was fast in practice. One of the problems is we're only getting one practice in. I don't know if we didn't get any practice in for Watkins Glen, if I remember correctly. That's a problem for these Xfinity drivers that haven't run these road courses. So we got nothing in Watkins Glen. Then we go to Mid-Ohio and they get one practice in. That's another problem. I hope that Road America, they get two practices in. These guys need it, but at least at this point, they've gotten two road course races. So I think you can trust the guys that perform well in the first two road courses are probably going to be at least have a huge advantage when we look at Road America. So if we look at last year's Road America race, and I can't believe we're already at 1 hour 5 minutes. I haven't even talked about it. So your winner was Jeremy Clements, 23 place difference points. No, there wasn't a hog in this race. You can look at the spreadsheet and see there wasn't a hog. The lead was tossed around. There just aren't very many laps. No one really runs away with it. Jeremy Clements scores the most points because he gets place differential. And in practice, he was probably a 10th place car. He's almost around that, so it wasn't much of a surprise to see him run around 10th. He plays the pit road strategy right. He wins the race. Very soft field, too, by the way. Just making sure that you know that. Parker Klingerman starts 39th. He finishes 10th. But he was good in practice. I wonder if he started so far back because he missed qualifying. There was probably some kind of qualifying issue. Because he was 15th in practice 1 and 14th in practice 2. He was very fast, and that's really not a surprise. If there would have been fantasy NASCAR Xfinity last year, I'm sure we would have been all over Parker Klingerman. Number three was Michael Annett, starting 17th. Doesn't seem that great. Practices weren't that good, but he runs around that position, and he plays the pit strategy. He, like Clements, stayed out on the track in stage two and stretched it to the end, and that ended up being, because there weren't any cautions, that was the winning strategy. He ends up finishing the race, I believe, in second. Not because he was a second-place car. Far from it. Probably wasn't even a 10th-place car. But he played the right strategy. Casey Mears starts 28th. He finishes 9th. Casey Mears was in the 98 Haas car, the car that we've seen Kevin Harvick run a couple times this year, Eric Almirola run. So I don't know who's going to – if it might be Casey Mears again. That would be interesting. If it is, I would be interested in playing him. I don't know what they would price him at. Probably wouldn't be that too high. But you've got a guy with a lot of experience. And Casey Mears, coming from the Mears family, I'm sure he has plenty of road course experience beyond NASCAR. If he gets to run that car this weekend, I would consider playing him. I'm not really thinking that he's going to be the elite hog, but he's definitely a top 10 guy. Matt Tift finishes third at Road America last year. Should have won. I mean, could have won. I mean, it came down to the end, and we talked about him and Clements spinning out. He had the lead up until that point. Brendan Gaughan finishes fifth, a decent road course racer. He's not going to be in this race. I don't know who's going to step into the three car. I'll be interested to see, but there it is. Gaughan was, well, he wasn't in the three car last year, but his average running position was 12th. It's about where you would put Brendan Gaughan. Josh Balicki. Now, Balicki, though, was in a BJ McLeod car, so be careful with that. He ends up finishing 12th. His average running position was 22nd. Probably played some strategy, didn't spin off. I wouldn't imagine him getting that good of a finish this year. Blake Koch in the Colleg Motorsports car, which is now motored by Ryan Truex, finishes 7th. I wouldn't be surprised to get a similar result from Truex at this race. Justin Marks, 5th to 4th. I don't know if they're going to put him back in the 42 car. If they do, I would roster him. I know it didn't work out in Mid-Ohio last week, but he just made too many mistakes. And this is a different road course. Mid-Ohio is probably a lot more like Sonoma, and Road America is probably more comparable to Watkins Glen. So some of those mistakes you made last week probably aren't going to make this week. But there's still plenty of mistakes to be made. Cole Custer finishes 8th. And you know, your top 10 fantasy scores, 9 of them finish in the top 10. Josh Balicki finishes 12th. He's the only one that doesn't. William Byron goes from 6th to 6th. Chastain, 12th most fantasy points, 19th to 13th. That's about where he ran. J.J. Yaley, 20th to 17th. He actually ran a little bit better than that. But again, Yaley was not with Rod Sieg. He was with TriStar. I wonder if, since there are only 45 laps, if Sieg will try to motor the cars around. I don't think they will. I think they'll just park it. No, they've parked them so far. There weren't very many laps at Mid-Ohio either, so I couldn't see J.J. Yaley even pushing it. Allgaier starts 7th. He finishes 11th. really a nondescript race there. Really didn't do anything. JGR Motorsports really didn't do anything other than Michael Annett. It's crazy. Michael Annett was the guy that had a good race. Ryan Ellis jumps into a BJ McLeod car, and he runs 27-21. Another guy who used to have a lot of experience in the Xfinity Series, no longer had a full-time ride. So I would watch for whoever's jumping into the BJ McLeod car, whoever's jumping into the Myro Gosson car. They're definitely someone you can get some value if you need it. I mean, we look at last week, you really didn't need any extreme value to build the optimal lineup. But if you feel like Allgaier or Christopher Bell are going to be one of the leaders, then maybe you go with one of these value guys. Or maybe if they just look really good in practice, like, well, hell, I still think they're going to get a top 10. It's not that I'm dying for the value. I just believe they have a good car, which Lally probably would have been. But again, Lally wasn't a great value. He was in 7,000 range, which was a pretty high price for the car, pretty low price for the road racer. Hemric starts 11th, finishes 15th. Not that good, but, you know, it's been... I mean, Hemric's results weren't that good last year. He's made a huge step forward this season. Dexter Bean running for Mario Gosselin. We've seen Bean a couple times this year. I don't know where, but I know we've seen the name. But he's running... He ran for Gosselin last year. Started 35th, finished 26th. It's not bad. Nicholas Hammond. Some of these guys we don't know, but I'm telling you, I didn't tell you earlier, the Road America, this is a soft, soft field, okay? And he ran for Rick Ware Racing. He starts 40th, finishes 29th. Ryan Sieg finishes 20th. I thought he didn't even finish at all in that race, but apparently I guess he did, 21st to 20th. I know he got into some issues. I believe that was, yeah, I don't need to talk about that. Spencer Gallagher, 26th to 24th. I don't know. I don't believe GMS was full-time last year. John Graham, 21 in fantasy points for Mike Harmon, 37th to 30th. All right, so I don't really need to go through any of these. They're all just... Sadler had a poor race, 3rd to 14th. Ben Kennedy was in the RCR car, 8th to 18th. Austin Cindric, 1st to 16th. Led a decent amount of laps. Looked like he had the best car, but ran into some issues at the end. Might have had a penalty as well. Very fast in practice. Looked like the best car. But he was in... Yeah, no, he was in the 22 car last year. Christopher Bell, 4th to 19th. I'm sure he ran into issues. Scott Lagacy was in the... Was he in the RCR car? I want to say Scott Lagacy was in the JGR car. Yeah, I think he was. I think I labeled these wrong. He was in the JGR car, the 18, or one of them, and he just wrecked early on. I think he wrecked like right from the beginning. Tim Cohen, he was in a Carl Long car last year. And he did, what, 34th to 36th. He wrecked at the very end. Almost brought out of caution. Was able to get the car going. And then the guys at the bottom, really don't need to know. Brendan Poole, 10th. He must have wrecked. Ryan Reed. I told you Ryan Reed ran into just about everything on the track. James Davidson. No, okay, so that's wrong. Lagacy was in an RCR car, I believe. He was probably in the 3 car. James Davison was in the JGR car, was very fast, and looks like he led most of the beginning of the race. So he had, what, 2.5 fast lap points, 2.75 laps led points, which basically means he probably ran away stage one and then he wrecked. So he was pretty good. I don't know. I'd have to watch the race over again and see what exactly happened with the 18 car and James Davison. I don't even know who James Davison is. Probably should, but when I look at these points, again, last year's kind of weird because everyone was running into everything. Everyone's wrecking all over the place. You go back 2 years ago, and you got Michael McDowell, who actually is a hog, running for RCR. If we get some random cup driver or ringer that comes down is in a good car, then yeah, I would take it. You got Michael McDowell here. If I look at the year before, we go back to 2015. Chase Elliott, he's not a hog. He was, I mean, he's not a ringer. He was in the cup car. Or he wasn't in the cup car, he's in JR, Junior Motorsports car. But Paul Menard, I believe, wins the race, but he's not a hog. If I go back to 2014, we're going pretty deep. And you got Brennan Gaughan, Alex Tagliani, Sam Hornish Jr. But they didn't end up scoring the most points. I mean, Sam Hornish Jr. had 10 hog points, but he ends up finishing the race 12th, so that pretty much erased all of his points. That's just another road course, and I'm just going to take the guys that are good at the road courses and hope they don't spin out. Yeah, it seemed like there was a lot of them last year. It's a really soft field. I'm trying to get the best cars that I can, the guys that have been running well lately. I mean, if I look at this road course from last year, I got Jeremy Clements. He was halfway decent. He played it right. Parker Klingerman doesn't surprise me. Michael Annette, he guessed right on strategy, and he hasn't been a terrible player in these road courses, so this is top three. Number four, Casey Mears in the 98 car. Again, that's not that crazy. And then the next two, I mean, if you built the optimal lineup last week, I'm guessing that you could have put Clements, Klingerman, Annette, Mears, Tift, and Gaughan. You could have taken all six. And it was kind of some strange stuff that happened at the end, but with pit road and the race going completely green and them not throwing cautions when they could have, but they didn't, maybe that changes things. I mean, we look at Mid-Ohio, and it really got shuffled around because of all the cautions at the end that they were pretty quick to throw. They didn't throw them at Road America. They could have. There was a lot of times where they really could have said, all right, but they did. They let the race keep going. And but you could have built this lineup. You could have afforded this lineup. I don't think you would have jumped on Jeremy Clements and thought he was going to win the damn race. You thought it'd be all right. Parker Klingerman would have been chalky. Casey Mears, probably pretty chalky. Matt Tift, Brendan Gaughan would have been popular. I wouldn't say that they were chalky, but Matt Tift starting 13th and Brendan Gaughan starting 18th. If you got Matt Tift starting 13th this week, you're playing him. And even if he's 9,500, you're going to play him. You'll have money for him. Brendan Gaughan or whoever's in the 3 car or in an RCR car. You're in an RCR car starting 18th. That's 5th in practice 1 and 12th in practice 2. You're going to play that guy. The only one that's a little off the board is Michael Annette. But he probably would have been the last guy to... Michael Annette and Jeremy Clements, you probably wouldn't have done that. You probably would have taken Austin Cindric. You would have taken a Justin Allgaier. An Elliott Sadler, maybe. James Davison, or maybe Scott Lagacy. Probably not Scott Lagacy, but James Davison definitely would have been someone you consider. Ryan Reed, but it's not that crazy. You're focusing in on the guys that are good at road courses. Even though Clements and Annette broke the optimal here, they're decent road course racers. And even if, you know, maybe they don't have home run days, you slide a little bit down. You got Blake Koch, not a surprise. Justin Marks, not a surprise. Cole Custer, William Byron, Ross Chastain. The guys aren't really like different names. There isn't Spencer Boyd in the top 10. Well, that'll do it for the week. I don't know if I helped or not. I think I helped. I've talked a lot about Xfinity road racing, which I probably never thought I would ever do in my life. And I probably didn't think I was going to do that about five or an hour ago when I thought, man, I'm kind of sometimes getting tired of doing this podcast. You know, for a guy who is tired of doing this podcast, I surprised myself by recording an hour and 15 minutes of unscripted Xfinity road course talk. That's probably a good place to stop. Trip to Light's fantastic.